Banks have played an instrumental role in building society. When we think back in Italy, hundreds of years ago, perhaps technology wasn't as present and around. People live in small villages and could kind of tell if the person was good for their word or their money. What happens now? How has technology and data played a role in ensuring we include people that perhaps didn't get a chance? In today's episode of Voices of Data, we travel to Israel to meet Saul Fine, a researcher and an entrepreneur looking at how data and psychometric assessments can test for people's integrity and understand how do we approve more loans and products for people that are truly worth it. So in this episode of Voices of Data, I'm going all the way to Israel to interview and hear Saul Fine, the founder and CEO of Innovative Assessments. Saul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I always ask our so welcome guests to say to me, how do they explain something to a 10-year-old? So today I'm going to ask you about how would you explain or ask assessment to a 10-year-old?
I think the easiest way might be to try and understand what makes people behave in a given way. So clearly a good borrower needs to have sufficient capital and the ability to repay. So that's an obvious and necessary requirement. And so in addition to having the ability to repay, people probably also need to be responsible and organized and accountable and trustworthy. And so the idea with the proper risk assessment is if we can understand all of those factors together, measuring them, aggregating it as a way to improve the overall evaluation and as a means to say, once we've measured those things, to what degree a person has a potential to repay or not to repay. And then what we can do is to say, okay, knowing that, what products can we offer this person? What products can they manage responsibly? And that can be approving a line of credit. It could even be personalizing the services or interacting or communicating differently with people based on personal preferences. So when it works, then both sides gain. That's how I would explain risk assessment in the sense that, you know, you start with understanding what it takes, and then you try to measure that in the best way you can.
So Saul, tell me a little bit about the first time you realized you were either working or studying data. When was that like moment in your journey that you were like, huh, I work with data?
Sure. So I think I realized that early on. In the beginning of my career, I was working with data in the military, data regarding new recruits and helping to place them in positions that they would excel. You know, later working in HR tech in a similar type of setting in recruitment and assessment and performance. And I think working with data has the whole time been really, telling a story. So you look at the data and it helps explain. And so what we're doing now in innovative assessments and similar to what we did in the past is looking at the data and seeing how it can be indicative of future behaviors.
This thing about how data can predict human behavior, is that the study of like psychometrics? Like, and can it really predict behavior or the future?
Right. You know, there's no silver bullet. It's not a crystal ball. I think in the end of the day, it's a matter of probabilities of behaviors. And that's probably true for, I guess, all predictive models. The idea is that even slight increases in probability can have a huge impact, right? A few percentage points of certainty can be the difference between a person getting approved for a loan. In psychometrics, the idea is if one can measure certain competencies that are important for a given behavior, then it's certainly possible to say with a greater degree of probability that people high in those qualities will perform better overall. So for example, important things that can be measured reliably and efficiently, then they can be indicative of future behavior. Now, it's not always easy to measure those things, or identify those important qualities. And that's where the science comes into play. So what psychometrics does is it measures those things in a structured way in the form of brief questionnaires around their behavioral preferences.
If I got that right, you said that these are some of the types of what most would understand as like primary research, as people like out there on the street actually talking to somebody and asking them some questions. But at your company, you've been able to do that and looking at this as an opportunity for inclusion, but you've done it digitally. Tell me a little bit more about sort of the thesis behind it and how does it work? Like, how do you get to see people weren't seen before?
That's the key, I think, to understanding how can this type of data have an impact and lift. So current credit models are already really advanced. They're already well established and comprehensive. And they tap sort of the ability to repay. And that's based on, you know, the old adage that past performance predicts future performance. And that's why, you know, if you have a long standing history of good credit payments, then you can be considered to be a good credit risk going forward. It makes perfect sense. The problem is if you don't have that historical data, you might often be considered automatically a higher risk, right? So we know that there are 1.7 billion people around the world with no formal bank accounts. There's probably close to another billion or so more who have inactive or dormant accounts. And so these are individuals who haven't built up a credit history and are often blocked from formal financial services. But amongst them are trustworthy, responsible, dependable, potentially very valuable customers and deserving of credit. So there's a real need, and there's a lot of these people out there that don't quite fit into, you know, your typical credit rating. And so the idea is if we can focus on some of these other aspects that we know that had we been able to chat with them or really understand, we know that they're trustworthy and responsible and are a good credit risk. We can focus on those aspects, sort of the willingness or intent to repay as a complement to the other metrics, and as such, be able to approve more loans or give them at least second consideration.
What I really can resonate with is the idea around Coinbase just IPO for what, $1 billion? There's lots of different forms of digital asset and different things that are growing today all over the world, but in specifically in countries like Brazil and Latin America or Mexico that have a high inflation rate and people live in a cash economy. And a lot of them for that reason have what you described in the beginning as like no credit history. They're operating under an underground world that is kind of really on the ground. We just don't pay attention to it. As you said, 1.7 billion, we've just decided is a charity case, which to me is one of the biggest fallacies of looking at inclusion as, oh, that's nice. Like that's sustainable. That's like an ESG thing. It's like, no, that's actually a ginormous market. And we have just looked at the values of optimization, as you said.
So you hit on, I think, a really good point because, you know, years ago, the idea of inclusion was sort of nice and plenty of initiatives around that. But what COVID has done, it's marginalized a much greater percentage of the population. And the reason for that is that, you know, a person who may have been in good standing or decent standing pre-COVID might have had, you know, been laid off or have sharply reduced income or being really a different, the whole landscape has changed. So people in a different economic situation. And so they can't necessarily be judged in the same way or evaluated in the same way that they were pre-COVID. And that's why lots of lenders have curtailed their originations until kind of things settle down, trying to mitigate their risk. And what that's done is it's made what used to be sort of just the underbanked or underserved. And now it includes a lot of people who weren't previously underbanked. So a lot more people are having a harder time getting access to credit. And a lot of that is because their prior credit histories aren't necessarily as informative post-COVID as they were pre-COVID.
Saul, it was a pleasure having you here.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be to participate, and thank you for inviting me. I think you're doing some very cool stuff, and it's really great to have an opportunity.